Every so often, a new technology arises that transforms everything it touches. It fundamentally alters how we relate to each other and the world around us. Right now, the technology with that potential is artificial intelligence. From WBHM, this is What's Possible, AI in Alabama. I'm Kelsey Shelton, and for the next hour, we will dive into a conversation about what AI means for the state. In what ways is AI already changing how we do things? How might it affect business, medicine, everyday life? And what dangers lie ahead with AI? We want to hear from you too. Send in your questions, comments, stories, and concerns. You can email them to news@wbhm.org. Stay with us for What's Possible, AI in Alabama. That's after a check of the latest news from NPR. This is What's Possible, AI in Alabama. On 90.3 WBHM, I'm Kelsey Shelton. Artificial intelligence seems to be everywhere nowadays, from digital assistants on our phones to customer service chatbots, not to mention breakthroughs with self-driving cars or how medicine is practiced. AI touches just about everything. So what exactly will this technology mean for us in Alabama? What's already happening with AI in the state? We'll explore those and other questions in the next hour with three guests. Jackie Gong is director of the Alabama Center for the Advancement of Artificial Intelligence at the University of Alabama. Jackie Gong, thank you for joining us today. Richie Kronenberg is vice president of strategy and startup growth at Innovation Depot in Birmingham. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
And then finally, Matt Might is director of the Hugh Paul Precision Medicine Institute at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Thank you so much for being here.
Happy to be here.
And we want to hear from you, too. What questions or comments do you have about AI in Alabama? Send them to us by emailing news@wbhm.org, and we will try to include them in the conversation. So let's get started. Dr. Gong, people might have some experience with ChatGPT, but what all does AI encompass?
So AI on campus right now, actually, if you talk to every student on campus, most of them started using ChatGPT and all these kind of tools to improve the study and improve the learning efficiency, right? So we have done lots of work to help the students to cope with these tools, learn from these tools and use these tools more efficiently and more ethically. That's the reason we have Alabama Center for the Advancement of AI is to be a university-wide efforts, integrate all the expertise from faculty and the interests of students. Based on this center, we also have a student-led AI club. Right now, AI club already have 300 students inside. We teach students how to use AI more effectively, how to develop AI and program with AI, code with AI. All this actually is to help students meet the requirements of the industry and the job careers. All those change happening right now. So that's what is happening on campus, right? Yeah.
Well, what are some other uses for AI today that we're seeing?
AI has been using for every industry, what I can see. Through AI Center, we also have lots of connections with industry. Like we talk with companies, help them integrate the large language models into their workflow. For example, for environment, the large language model could become a very useful tool to help the practitioners to access the literatures, policy documents, regulations, to understand that detail. Previously, it's all like a manual process and right. A heuristic process to read this documentation. But right now, the large language model could be used as a very good access tool for these people. Mm-hmm. So whatever kind of, I think the at least right now we have collections with different kind of industry like healthcare and environment. Like and in Alabama, actually, the uniqueness of Alabama industry is the forestry companies. Hmm. There are many forestry companies to sell the forestry products. they also want to make their system more resilient to current uncertain economics.
Mm-hmm.
So they also leverage these tools to improve and monitor the market change, uncertainties of the market like that.
Right.
So that's all the things happening right now.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Mai, I want to ask you, what are some misconceptions about AI?
There's probably quite a few misconceptions out there right now. And just to be clear, I think to sort of set the stage for a broad definition of AI, I think the field as a whole for decades has been striving to create machines that mimic humans in some way. And we've been getting good at mimicking different aspects of them over time. And what's changed recently is that we've been able to mimic something new about humans, which is their sense of creativity. Their more, broader ability to reason. These are the kinds of new capabilities we've been able to mimic with the ChatGPT generative AI revolution. I think that's why it's taken off so much lately. Probably the most, common misperception I get, people will ask me, is it conscious? And I'll say, well, I'm not a philosopher, but to my understanding, no, it's not. These AIs are not necessarily conscious, even though at times they engage with us in ways that could seem as if they were, because they so thoroughly mastered the use of language.
Well, we got a listener comment from Dr. Budwani, and he says Birmingham AI has been bringing people together from around our city to engage with AI so that we can be ahead of the curve both in incorporation and in innovation. So Dr. Mai, I wanted to ask if you could speak more to that idea of AI bringing people together.
Yeah, so I think from my vantage point on the healthcare side of this, I think AI has become a focal point for collaboration on campus at UAB. We get outreach at the Precision Medicine Institute all the time now, asking how folks can leverage AI better within their specific clinical discipline. And I think that there's a sense in which people understand that AI can really help deliver personalized care in almost any discipline within medicine now by taking a really comprehensive view of someone's medical records. So certainly in healthcare, AI has become a magnet that's pulling disparate strands of the community together in ways that they never would have come together before. It's allowing us to access the totality of a patient's data in a meaningful way, I think, for the first time. So there's an inherent sort of nucleating force there that's pulling disparate communities together within healthcare. And I think that's happening outside healthcare too. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure there's plenty of examples of that.
We had another... I'm sorry, Richie.
No, I would love to jump in there because the Birmingham AI meetup that the listener is speaking about is actually a meetup that happens at Innovation Depot monthly. So Austin Sensman and Will Blackburn are the founders of this nonprofit. Started, I would say, about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and brought just a small group of people together in the Innovation Depot and talked about the newest, greatest things that are out there and how people can use it. And from about a group of 30, that has grown to 150 people showing up monthly. And they recently did a hackathon with a company called Lovable, which helps you build prototypes and MVPs. So we've seen this community grow every single month. It's sold out every single time. And it has really shown how there's so much interest in it and how bringing them together has sort of created this enthusiasm and people working together on it and learning from each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that community piece has just been really wonderful to witness from our standpoint.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying AI as a bringing people together in the sense that it's a community, it's a communal experience for some versus the tech bringing people together literally.
Yeah, I think because of the different levels of understanding in that meetup, they talk about people being like a learner, an enthusiast, like an adopter. I think having somebody that might be one step ahead of you and learning from them is something that makes people more comfortable starting to use it and seeing what's possible.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you're like at that very first stage and just have no clue what you can do with it, somebody leading you along the way has been so helpful for them. So I think that community piece of if somebody else showing you how you can best use it is what it's for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if I could add, I think I'd be remiss if I didn't mention one community that is using it very heavily, which is the patient community. I've mm-hmm. seen very heavy adoption of a lot of these technologies, really aggressive adoption of a lot of these technologies by patients, by patient foundations. I think it's been really transformative for them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we did have another listener comment from Mike. They say, when I say human-centered AI, I mean AI that's built to extend us, not replace us. So I wanted to ask you three, how might AI make humans more efficient?
I always like to use four lenses to evaluate human-centered AI. AI is more about collecting people to computers, collecting people to knowledge, collecting people to physical world, and collecting people to people. That's a four lens I use to evaluate a human-centered AI. Because if you look at it like these four lens of collections, right? Actually, that's nowadays the internet is doing right now. Like collecting people to people, that's the social media platforms right now, right? Collecting people to computers. Can you imagine like 15 years ago, 2010, when iPhone doesn't really became so popular today, we cannot imagine nowadays we could collect people to computers in this way. Smartphone is another example. And then collecting people to knowledge, collecting people to physical world. Physical world is the robots, right? Robots actually has a big breakthrough with large language models, these kind of nowadays AI. So I would like to recommend for like human-centered AI, we could look at these four lens to see any kind of AI model and systems. We need to look at it, does it really help to make these four collections? Because these four collections is related to efficiency, it related to all those societal benefits.
We also have a listener called in and left a little testimonial I wanted to play, John. This is from John.
I think AI is a fantastic application. I think the biggest threat is our humanity and how inefficient we are in just existing well. And if we put garbage in to a fantastic tool, we're going to get garbage out.
I wanted to ask you three if you could speak to what John is saying there.
Yeah, I think one thing he's referencing here when he talks about garbage in, garbage out is the quality of the training data and then the quality of the alignment that takes place after the creation of the AI. So maybe to break it down a little bit, you know, to get a system like a ChatGPT, you have to train it on tremendous amounts of text generated by humans. And really what these systems do is they will take all the text they can find on the internet at this point and then some. In order to build the training set, well, you know, that training set has lots of inherent, you know, biases and, you know, what we call natural or unnatural alignments within it based on just what happens to be out there. So if you want a chatbot to respond in a more, you know, sensible way, you have to then go through an alignment phase where you teach it, okay, this is an example of a good response, this is an example of a bad response. And if you're not, you know, cognizant of, you know, some of the implicit structure that's out there on the text on the internet, and you don't take, you know, the effort to do this alignment step thereafter, yeah, you can definitely get some garbage out the other side. It takes a lot of thoughtful work to develop these systems well. Yeah, and then there's also, I think, the smaller scale version of this, which is that I think you do have to learn how to use these systems well too, you know, so that, mm-hmm. you know, not all interactions are created equal. If you prompt it well, you can get much more out of these systems than if you don't know how to use them well. Maybe to tie that to the prior point on efficiency, some of the biggest gains in efficiency for us come when we actually have AI write programs to automate repetitive tasks, you know, and just knowing that's even possible is one way to really leverage these systems to their fullest.
Well, another question that I had, and Richie, I want to pose this to you. How do we reconcile the tension between designing systems that augment human capabilities with those that might replace them?
So I think at the end of the day, those that might replace them, it is all for kind of the efficiency standpoint, right? It's something that is a repetitive task, something that we probably don't even enjoy doing, realistically. So if AI can do that, why not? I mean, I have a tool right now called Fixer that manages my inbox. Wonderful. I did not enjoy managing my inbox. It literally auto-drafts my responses for me. So I will let them do that every single day. So I think that's what you really look at. It's you know, what is something that's repetitive that can be done by an AI assistant or a tool like that really requires very little human interaction. Other times, you know, you're going to maybe use it as more of a brainstorm of a co-founder, an assistant, but you still put your own spin on it. And I think that's the most important thing. You don't just take what it spits out. It is that initial kind of drafter for you. It's that initial feedback loop that you can get, but mm-hmm. you as the human are still the main responsible one.
So it's a tool, but we should evaluate what it's telling us and
Absolutely.
Comes.
Okay. And I think to Mike's point, like prompting is probably the skill here that everybody needs to work on the most. So if you tell the AI, I want you to act as an expert in certain industry, I want you to treat this like this, I want you to give me an output like that, the more details you can provide it, the more specific it can be. So if you can do that, and you do that with that, then you get your first output and you kind of do the same thing there then too. If it didn't give you what you really wanted, you reprompt it and say, hey, you did this really well. You didn't do that well. It's almost like you work with another human or you're like a coworker. You're like, hey, I love this that you made, but I would love for you to look into this for the second version. And that's how you treat it.
Well, you are listening to What's Possible AI in Alabama. I'm Kelsey Shelton. We'll be right back. This is What's Possible AI in Alabama on 90.3 WBHM. I'm Kelsey Shelton. I'm here with three experts discussing the potential impacts of AI on Alabama. My guests are Dr. Jackie Gong, Director for the Alabama Center for the Advancement of Artificial Intelligence at the University of Alabama. Say that three times fast. Richie Kronenberg, Vice President of Strategy and Startup Growth at Innovation Depot. And finally, Matt Might, Director of the Hugh Paul Precision Medicine Institute at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. So now I want to get into how AI might affect different industries. Richie, can you tell us about how AI is starting to make its way into the workplace? You were kind of just getting into that, but tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I'd love to tell you a little bit more about like the startup world that I work in. So looking at that, one program that we run at Innovation Depot is called Voltage. It's an idea stage program. So anyone with a tech or tech-enabled idea can come to us and we help them validate that idea. Now, that looked very different last year from what that program looks like this year. So a cool thing is, we use AI now to help validate these ideas. Normally, when doing market research on whether there's an opportunity for your idea in the market, you have to go all around and find the market research. Now you can prompt, do deep research. Basically, AI scrapes the internet for you to figure out, you know, what that market looks like. Same with customer validation. Like what people do is they go out, talk to people, and like get information from them. Hey, is this something you potentially would use, pay for? Now you can simulate audiences and basically do your customer discovery. Mm-hmm. So from that startup standpoint, I think people are able to move so much quicker.
Right.
What was there before, we're still taking the same steps, and that will be the same in the workplace probably, but you know, we're still taking all the same steps, but it's so much quicker than before and so much more efficient. And so that means you can succeed quicker or you can fail quicker, which in startup life is very helpful.
Right. What kind of jobs, I want to ask you three, what kind of jobs do we think could be brought into the state on account of AI?
Well, I think, you know, there's an emerging kind of job we're starting to create right now at UAB and the Precision Medicine Institute. We call them analysts. And right now, what they do is we get a lot of patients reaching out with complex, very complex medical conditions that have, you know, run out of standard of care. And what we try to do is really do deep dives on their medical records, everything they've done, look for missing diagnoses, potential therapeutics. You know, this work was almost intractable in some ways prior to AI. It was just very hard to do. And what we're finding out now is that with reasonable use of AI and appropriate, responsible, safe use of AI, we can do the appropriate deep dives and capture the insights necessary to do these really tailored diagnostics or tailored precision therapeutics plans. And so I see this as potentially an emerging profession enabled by AI.
Right. We did have a listener question from Nicole who asks, as AI advances in healthcare, what are your views about who should be held accountable or who will most likely be held accountable in cases where AI results in medical errors?
Yeah, so in this case, I think the human has to stay in the loop when it comes to healthcare. I don't think we're ever going to be comfortable handing over control of decisions to AI. So I'm firmly in favor of making sure that whatever the AI has come up with, you know, a trained clinician is there to validate the result. And in that sense, the, you know, the fault will still, or the responsibility will still stay with the physician in that case. I think what's interesting is there's already murmurs of a future where because AI has become so good at helping, it would be irresponsible not to use it in some sense, especially when you're working with complex medical cases. Whereas that's not the standard yet, but you can imagine a future where that's true.
Right. Dr. Gong, I have to ask you about how AI will affect education. Mm-hmm. So what are some ways we're seeing AI being used in schools?
Actually, reflect to the previous question, I want to add one thing.
Sure.
Is that that's the Alabama AI Center we're working on, especially to develop more auditing tools for AI or evaluation tools for AI. For different kind of large language models, when they start generating the results, is there any tools available to help doctors, physicians, they could evaluate the potential errors generated by these kind of tools? Apparently, right now there is no very common tools for this. Everyone is using it, but there's no really tools available to give comprehensive auditing or evaluation of these kind of models. So that's exactly what we're working on, trying to provide these tools for different domains to evaluate the specific domains and the potential errors and give warnings of the output of this AI. So that's kind of one thing. That's also in education as well. In education, like at the University of Alabama, we are building another tool called Ask Obama. Right? Oh. Ask Obama is like there will be a student tool to ask any question they have on campus regarding the potential cost of registration or pathways to different majors. And also might also have some interest, the student might want to get a research experience interest from the faculty, right? So we build these kind of tools on campus. We're building these tools on campus to help answer all these questions to the students. I think that's one example of AI could use to guide the students. Because previously, right now, the students, they need to go to the website, right? Yep. Search all the information, read it line by line, and then get what they need, right? But right now, the Aspama might would be good to answer the question. But all these answers generated by Aspama is actually based on this kind of validation and auditing tools for each large language model to make sure the answer is right. Another thing, if the AI doesn't know the answer, the AI could say no. So that's kind of the abilities we are building. Other than that is AI in education is we are integrating the textbook into the tools, and then the students could ask or add questions to regarding the textbook. There will be like a specialized AI tutor for every course.
Mm.
So that's kind of things we are building on campus. Yeah.
Well, I of course have to ask, how do you feel about those criticisms regarding students' use of AIs like ChatGPT?
That's lots of discussion on this and also large debate on that. And also has lots of educational experimental results coming up regarding this. But maybe I'm a little bit biased because I'm an AI researcher, and also I saw lots of papers coming up is using ChatGPT as a personalized education tool to support students learning in Africa. And the results showed that actually using ChatGPT as a learning tool actually increased at least twice the efficiency of learning curve.
Right.
So I think what we are doing at the University of Alabama, at least in computer science department, because right now all the computer science graduates, they are facing very significant issue is all the big tech company asking the software developer positions with AI skills, right? And also they are pretty much laying off many entry-level software developers. That's is happening right now. So what we are trying to do is we want to teach the students coding with AI, learning with AI in the first year to teach them how to use AI more responsibly or ethically, rather than wait for the last of the day, tell them, oh, that's the AI you could use. So that's kind of things we are trying to make change in the curriculum and the catch up what is happening. And I think that's what we are doing right now. Yeah.
Well, to push back on that just a little bit, mm-hmm. is that maybe a cause for concern, though, that those entry-level positions are being eradicated? Is that because of the AI, or is that just something that you've noticed and so you want to prepare students for? Kind of chicken or the egg situation.
According to conversations with all the industry partners of AI Center, it's more related to AI is becoming a very useful tool in different ways. So mainly what they're doing is they ask the employees to gain AI skills. I think maybe Richard, you can add more on this. But at least that's where through the conversations we can see that, I think that's the students also have a huge demand in learning AI as well. That's the reason why AI Club, we started just last year, and right now we have 300 students in the club every week come to learn about how to use AI and how to develop AI tools. Yeah,
I would love to add on to that. So obviously with software development and AI, that goes hand in hand. But I even think looking at the startups, I mean, or just even hiring someone on our team ourselves, you ask that question, like, how much, you know, do you know, and how much do you use it, and how comfortable do you feel with it? And I think if in education this is not being taught, you're going to be behind the curve. You're not mm-hmm. going to be considered for that role, most likely. I will probably not consider you if you are not at least using this in some type of capacity. Mm. I think it's essential for an organization to keep up with what's going on. And I think if you as an individual don't do that in school or outside of school, you're going to be behind.
Wow, interesting. Well, I wanted to ask, what does, since we're speaking about innovation and being ahead of the curve, what does this tech coming to Birmingham say about the city's commitment to innovation?
I think that's another thing. If the city would fall behind on this, then we're, you know, falling behind further in the tech scene. I mean, Birmingham is a upcoming tech hub, I would say. Obviously, we're not in an Austin or a San Francisco or anything like that, but we've made some tremendous amounts of steps forward. We have an innovation depot where everybody can come together and learn and be amongst like-minded people. The state, Innovate Alabama, is pumping tons of money into innovation. So this is one step down, you know, part of the journey. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. if we miss that part of the journey, we're just going backwards. So I think that's where the state really has to see, you know, what can we provide from a resource standpoint, what can we provide from an education standpoint to help everybody with the involvement of AI.
And how do we balance innovation with, I guess, consideration in this, while this tech is developing so rapidly? I mean, I guess consideration of students who may not have that learning or may not have that taught to them, or, mm-hmm. you know, just how do we balance this quickly moving, developing technology with people that might be kind of left behind?
So I actually think AI, obviously, if everybody has access to some form of technology, whether it's a phone or laptop or anything like that, I think it levels the playing field in a way.
Interesting.
Because you can use that as your coworker, your co-founder, your assistant for yourself. So you might not always have access to an expert or somebody with certain knowledge, but now you do have some kind of sparring partner that you can talk to with the piece of education. So I think it can level the playing field if you have access to the tools.
Yeah.
And I want to add that it actually, what I can see, AI in Alabama is a story of opportunity. The reason why I say this is because consider previously when AI is not arriving this kind of stage, accessibility of modern technology is still very, you know, highly cost, right? But right nowadays, you know, internet is kind of became more and more, you know, covered in Alabama. Another thing is that you have a smartphone, you can talk to the ChatGPT, you can learn from it. Definitely there's some potential errors generated by that, but I think that's comparing to many years ago to learning some new things or develop some new tools or software or anything. I think these kind of AI is increasing the efficiency to, or increasing the accessibility.
Right.
So Alabama is comparing to previous years, maybe Alabama, we cannot compare or compete with maybe Silicon Valley, but nowadays is accessible for everyone. I think the thing is that I don't worry about that people, I think the thing is we need to do more education.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the reason why I came to Alabama. And that's the reason I also went to Birmingham AI to make more collection with Birmingham AI. I think Alabama, all of us, we need to work together to build the education materials and resources for Alabamians and make it more accessible through these kind of AI tools for everyone in Alabama.
Right.
So that's what I can see in the future. Yeah,
I just want to add that I agree that I think AI actually transforms accessibility. I mean, you could even have a phone line where you're not talking to a human, you're talking to a machine. So we can make it about as accessible as anything, thanks to AI itself. And to your point about education, I think there's an education on how to use it, but also we really need to educate folks on how to use it responsibly. And I think that often gets left out. I think folks aren't totally aware in some cases around data privacy issues that can come up sometimes with some of the tools and not other of the tools, and knowing how to check when you are surrendering the data you're submitting is really important, especially if you're a patient or a physician. You really need to know these things. And then being aware that they're not perfect. I mean, they've mimicked humans so well that they mimic human errors. so we need to educate folks that you actually have to double check them. And while they are getting better at sort of fact-checking themselves and things like that, there's always going to be a need for some vigilance in the results that they give you back. And I think that's part of the education that's essential as we take it out to all of Alabama.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And while we're on education, I do have one final question for Dr. Gong on this topic, or unless more crop up as we continue. But how are we seeing educators use AI tools? Like, we're hearing a little bit about healthcare industry, we're hearing about startups, people just starting businesses. So how are the people in charge in schools using it?
That's a good question. Yeah. Until right now, that's actually most of the instructors, they started using the tools, these kind of AI tools to at least prepare their course materials. I think most likely what I heard is that they, all the instructors use it to change their teaching format and make their classroom more engaging. I think that's very positive things, because previously, without these tools, we still treat students, or we always use the traditional lecture-based teaching, right? But right now, with the assistant of the AI tools, gave lots of idea how to do the ice breaking in the classroom, how to do the engaging activities in the classroom. I think this change actually is exactly push the educators to reconsider the value of learning, right? Because previously, without this AI tool, we still think, you just memorize this knowledge and have it in your brain, and then you can get a job. But right now is push us to reconsider why we need to learn this. What is the value of that? And how much return if I learn these kind of skills, right?
Right.
So I think every industry, not just the education, every industry is help us to rethink what is the value of the knowledge, what is value of learning. I also have a conversation with instructor to teach the to do the CBR training to help the rural health workers to do the to CBR training. And then the gentleman who teach the class also asked me about, oh, is AI going to replace us? I said, no, AI will bring more values to your class. Because that's the things AI might not be able to replace, because that's the most critical moments need to help the people recover and save lives, right? So I said, AI will push us to reconsider the values of the knowledge you are teaching, and might increase the value for your classroom. So I think that's the positive things I can see. Yeah,
that is so fascinating that you say that, because one of the things I was thinking was how classrooms are so output based,
mm-hmm.
and they're not very processed based. Unfortunately, yeah. It's a lot of, you know, you do this and just try to make an A at the end or try to make some good grade at the end. But I think, and so to the criticisms of students using AI tools, I think, well, if it's just output based, maybe that's why they would be inclined to use it.
Yeah, well, actually, I think this is a good point. We need to pay attention to the students and what they're teaching us about AI and education. I was actually shocked by my own daughter this morning. So she's just been doing her final exams, and she showed me what she did with AI. So I've given them access to a little ChatGPT like AI that I created, and they've been using it in interesting ways. And what she did is she took all of her lecture notes from the entire semester and put them into this tool and said, I want you to write me a quiz program that quizzes me on my own notes. And it did.
Yeah.
It created a program that interactively quizzed her on her own notes. I thought, you know, I never intended anyone to do with that with this, but look what you did. And I think so students can teach us how it's going to transform education.
Absolutely. You are listening to What's Possible, AI in Alabama. I'm Kelsey Shelton. We will be right back. This is What's Possible, AI in Alabama on 90.3 WBHM. I'm Kelsey Shelton. I'm here with three experts discussing the potential impacts of AI on Alabama. My guests are Jackie Gong, Director for the Alabama Center for the Advancement of Artificial Intelligence at the University of Alabama, Richie Kronenberg, the Vice President of Strategy and Startup Growth at Innovation Depot, and finally, Matt Might, Director of the Hugh Call Precision Medicine Institute at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. So now I want to start getting into the concerns and fears people have about AI. We had a lot of listeners expressing concerns regarding regulation. So I want to ask you three, what, if any, regulations do you think we need to have on this tech?
One thing I've been a proponent of, I call them almost like, the food labels where you see the ingredients. I think it's important to have these transparency laws that say that for an AI model that's out there, what was it trained on? What was the composition of its training set, so that you can have a better sense of how it was created and what kind of pitfalls or blind spots it might have on the inside? And then some information around the alignment process too, so you know how those might have been accounted for or not been accounted for. So at this stage, I'm really in favor of transparency around how these things were built. I favor, wherever possible, open source models where the training data is available, the weights are available, and outsiders can really inspect them to see, what quirks they might have and we need to be aware of.
Yeah. Do you two have any opinions on this?
This is a little bit less of my expertise, but what I've been kind of paying attention to, and I think everybody could do that, just to dumb it down a little bit for listeners, is that when you use the O3 model in ChatGPT, you can see it think. So it like shows you kind of what it's doing and where it's looking things up. And I think I recommend people to do that, because that's another way of seeing like, where is this scraping from? What is it considering? And you can even ask for that, you know, give me the sources that you like, got this information from. So kind of putting the responsibility back with the user of, hey, make sure to ask where this is coming from. Put your own kind of ethical hat on, and it's like, is this something that I should use or not? But that's what I've been doing, and it's taught me a lot of how it thinks. So I think that's important for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I regard this. I actually, for AI regulation, there's one thing I really want to add is accountability. Mm-hmm. Accountability means that for every AI model or systems to go into deploy in the real world workflow will have real world practice and consequences. Need to have accountable information inside, like how the model being developed, what kind of data used, and also who evaluated, what kind of auditing process has been gone to evaluate the potential errors of AI, and also if there is a collective incident happen, who will take control and who will take the responsibility of that? That's all the information need to integrate into the AI system to mm-hmm. make it accountable, rather than say that we just have an AI and then let us use it. Mm-hmm. And that, I think that's what I mean, accountability for the AI systems. Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe related to that, some disclosure rules around disclosing when something is an AI. Yeah, so if you're mm-hmm. talking to a chatbot, you should know it's a chatbot mm-hmm. and not yeah. a real human being.
Right.
Or if something was generated in whole or in part, with AI, maybe a disclosure saying this was generated with AI. Mm-hmm. If it's a stock photo that was generated by, it'd say, hey, this was generated by AI. So I think, including these disclosures is important. There's even some broader ramifications for why it's important, because as AIs continue to scrape the internet to train themselves, there's actually bad things that can happen if they train on AI-generated data. Mm-hmm. So there's even some good reasons to have these disclosures out there openly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to ask something that I'm personally curious about. How potentially detrimental could the data storage element of AI become if that remains unregulated?
Are you referring to the fact that when you enter something into ChatGPT or a tool like that, it actually then retains that chat transcript and mm-hmm. then can use that in mm-hmm. training of future conversations? I'd say that this is an area where there's going to have to be some addressing at some point. And I can give you some scary hypothetical, but things that could actually happen. So, for example, let's suppose that you enter someone's personal information into a chat transcript. Well, in theory, that could get baked into the next training run for that model, and then suddenly there's a way to extract that back out the other side. And there's people that work on problems like this. So for the proprietary models, there's probably needs to be some way of pulling data out. Mm-hmm. Right now there really is no way to go back and say, hey, I didn't mean to send you that. Can you pull that back out? Or, hey, I noticed my personal information has been baked into your training. Mm-hmm. Can you pull that out? Mm-hmm. It gets a little bit murkier with the open source models because there isn't a retraction mechanism at that point. So we need to be very careful about what goes into the training of these things in the first place. And if it's going to be trained on data that comes from interactions with users, there might need to be some regulations around that, or certainly awareness of that mm-hmm. Before folks actually go out and use these tools.
We got a listener comment from Dan. He says, we're seeing data centers cropping up around the country, including one in Bessemer. He asks about the environmental ramifications, including energy needs and water consumption of the data centers that are needed to power AI. Just a concern that I was wondering if you could speak to.
I don't know if I'm super qualified to speak on this, but what I can say at a general level is that yes, the data usage needs for these models can, or the energy usage needs for these models can be substantial. And then the cooling needs can be substantial too, which of course ties into energy, mm-hmm. which is I think where a lot of the water issues can come into play. That's why they tend to build them in colder climates, mm-hmm. Where some of the cooling costs are easier to manage. One thing I will say about this, just watching how the technology is evolving, is that the efficiency of these algorithms and these techniques is increasing at a pretty dramatic rate. And the amount mm-hmm. of energy it takes to do something today might be exponentially lower to do that same thing in a year. And that will probably continue to be true for a while as the technology sort of rapidly evolves and becomes more efficient. Mm-hmm. So hopefully there's a future where it's not as energy intensive as it is now. I mean, after all, a human brain, it's about 20 watts, so it's less than most light bulbs. So mm-hmm. There's something that says that in nature we can do this pretty efficiently in the limit, and maybe we'll get there with machines at some point too.
Mm. Yeah, I completely agree that AI is getting more and more efficient, but it's still on the way. So, but As a Alabama resident, actually, I'd like to see more data centers coming up in Alabama. Oh. The reason why is that because data centers really bring jobs to Alabama.
Mm.
Because with data centers, it means we have data housed here, and we will have more startups or business coming up around, you know, surrounding a data center. I think that's a good thing for Alabama. Even we don't know yet what kind of environmental concerns might have with the water and the temperature, all those kind of things. But the thing is, without these data centers, what are we going to do? We, you know, to empower the business in Alabama, empower all the manufacturing business, and like I talked to ChatGPT about what is the major business and industry in Alabama. Apparently, manufacturing, mm-hmm. and aerospace, and forestry companies. All of them, they need to rely on these data centers to improve and improve the industry and improve the efficiency and recruit more people, right? Mm-hmm. So actually for me, I like to see more of these kind of data center coming up and then take the lead on this, in the United States.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting, a bit of a hot take today.
Yeah.
We also got a listener comment from TK, and they said, I just read that Audible.com, owned by Amazon, is using AI to read books for its users. If true, this will pose a threat to jobs held by professional readers, just as AI is taking orders at the drive-thru, will do the same thing. So I want to ask about that. If more companies start to engage in that practice, what kind of guardrails should we have in place for workers?
I mean, I think it also depends on the company. So I listened to a podcast the other day, and the CEO of that podcast said, you know what, I'm not firing anyone because I want my organization to be a human-focused organization. Yeah, they can use AI as much as they want to, but this is what I stand for, and this is what we're going to do moving forward. So I think it kind of depends where you work, what, you know, people's views on it. But it's going to happen. I mean, in a way... you can create podcasts with ChatGPT. I think that's what people do. They're like, hey, here's my lecture notes, spit it out to me as a podcast, because that's the way I like to learn it. So it is what people are asking for as well. So I think there's kind of both things to look on.
Yeah, my take is that, yeah, I think it will end up creating far more jobs than it destroys. Mm-hmm. But there is going to be some economic dislocation in the interim. And I think that we need to be honest about that. And we need to provide some retraining. Mm-hmm. I think that we need education programs that help people shift to what these new jobs are, or even the new form of their current job. I mean, every job is being impacted by this one way or another. And so you're either going to need retraining for a new job that didn't exist previously, or the new version of your own job has become AI-powered.
We got another listener question from Nicole. We had a lot of listener questions about concerns and fears regarding AI. What do the panelists think of the potential impact of AI advancements on groups that have historically been digitally underserved, such as older adults and low-income families?
Yeah, I say in the context of medicine, I think there's a lot of excitement that this could be a key technology in allowing us to really address some of the major disparities that are out there in healthcare. Because it allows us to bring such powerful expertise right to the point of care for everyone. And there are some initiatives here to actually do this, really, for the state of Alabama, to see if we really can extend world-class expertise to every single clinical encounter in the state. I think AI has that within its promise, and I'm excited to see that we're actually moving forward on things like that. And so I also think that the ability to really personalize care is unrivaled, and I think personalization of care through AI almost inherently helps address some issues with health disparities. In fact, when President Obama launched the Precision Medicine Initiative years ago, that was really his thesis, was that, you know, truly tailoring care to individuals so that everybody received this ultra-personalized care was inherently a way of addressing these disparities.
Yeah, another thing I want to add, actually, I think AI will bring good opportunities for underserved communities. Because consider underserved, why the community underserved. Previously, we don't know. You know, we look at all those documentations or like what we did lots of research on looking at the social media data, right? Social media data to, there are lots of research ongoing right now is look at the social media data to try to understand the underserved community. But the problem is that underserved communities maybe not have limited bandwidth. Their data actually is very few in the social media data, right? So it means the traditional work to mining this data actually is already biased, right? But AI actually could help us to not just look at the social media, could link every data together, not just look at the health data, also look at the health data, social media data, also look at the community data. All the data we could link them together. Mm-hmm. Because previously the machine learning is kind of, if you train the data on health data, it's pretty much generate health outcomes. But if you train the education data, you will generate educational outcomes. But we could put health, education, social, community, everything together to try to understand the struggles of the communities are facing, and then to provide more systematic acknowledgement of underserved, and then provide and give more suggestions to the policymakers to allocate the resource more efficiently than before. So what I can see is more like there are lots of opportunities over there and the good solutions than before. Yeah.
Well, that is, Richie, did you have something to add to
that? I'll add one more final thing. So what I've been seeing is the future of the AI agents. So I think where let's take elderly people, you'll be able to talk to your AI agent and will perform a task for you. So they could be saying something along the lines of, hey, my prescription is running low, I need this refilled and sent to my house. That's going to make certain things much more accessible than them having to go out, go to a pharmacy, things like that. That's one example. But I think somebody doing a task for you, or the AI doing a task for you, can also open up a lot of opportunities.
Right. Well, that is it for the program. I would love to thank my guest, Jackie Gong, director for the Alabama Center for the Advancement of Artificial Intelligence at the University of Alabama, Richie Kronenberg, the vice president of strategy and startup growth at Innovation Depot, and finally, Matt Might, director of the Hugh Call Precision Medicine Institute at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Thank you to you all for being here today. What's Possible AI in Alabama was produced by Andrew Yeager with assistance from Noel Ananin. Our executive director is Will Dahlberg, and I'm Kelsey Shelton. Thank you so much for listening.